Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Anybody still alive? Anybody still awake out there? Doom and gloom after 6 weeks? Who'd have thought? Who would have thought? 3-3. I am not one of those people. Welcome into the playbook, Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday on Patriots.com radio. My name is John Rook. Wow. I have to admit, I'm as stunned and flabbergasted and flummoxed. How many other adjectives can we throw in there? Yeah, I'm as flummoxed as you are about this one. There's no rhyme or reason for it. Quite simply put, this team failed to take advantage of the situations that it had presented to it and ended up screwing up. I mean, I said it as I was watching the game on Sunday, I said throughout the entire final three quarters, largely. I mean, they were down 10-7, didn't really think much about it, to be honest with you. Didn't think anything about it, to be honest with you. And figured that they would figure out a way to work their way back. But I knew something was amiss, felt like something was amiss when they get a gift on John Ryan's muff on the punt at the end of the second quarter. And they end up, you know, getting the ball with unbelievable field position and cannot stick it in the end zone. But can at least get 3 points out of it. That was a colossal collapse of majestic proportions. And I don't think anybody can underscore that. To not get 3 points out of that situation is you know, a crime against football humanity. I mean, you have to take advantage of that. And I'm watching last night's San Diego game. And you know what? First and foremost, no matter how bad you think you have it, there's always somebody that has it worse, right? There's always somebody that has it worse. In this particular instance, the San Diego Chargers. They blew a 24-0 lead and gave up 35 unanswered to Peyton Manning and the Broncos last night. So no matter how bad you think you've got it, there's always somebody else that has it a little bit worse. And that goes for not only everything in sports, but just about everything in every walk of life that you come in contact with. But I was thinking that last night while watching that game and believing that, you know, I just kind of knew that right there when you blew a chance like that, it was not going to be pretty at the end of the game. Sure enough, last night, Denver and Peyton Manning, they get their chances in the red zone, and they made San Diego pay and pay dearly. Now, granted, they had a couple of pick sixes involved, but, you know, you have to have playmakers on defense. And we thought that the Patriots had the potential for some playmakers on this defense. And, okay, outside of Chandler Jones, you might also put Brandon Spikes in as a potential playmaker as well. I think certainly Vince Wilfork can be listed in there. But at the same time, you can't, you know, teams can run away from him. So there's got to be somebody in the back seven. There really has to be somebody in the back seven to be a quote-unquote playmaker. And really, other than Spikes, who do you have right now? Even Gerard Mayo had a tremendous gaffe in the game. So, you know, and I don't even know what to say about the secondary anymore, folks. I really don't. I mentioned to you, I believe we talked about this last week. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, but I want to bring up this again for those that may be tuning into the program for the first time or have not heard it often. But the Patriots are coached differently in the defensive backfield. You know, and I hear on the local sports talk radio about, hey, they got to turn around. Okay, you know, let's just put it this way. That's overly simplistic. It isn't quite as simple as that. These guys are not coached to turn around necessarily on the play. A lot of it that they're told to do is instinctive, but they're coached largely to watch a receiver's hands, okay? This is the way the guys are taught, to watch a receiver's hands. I've seen it hundreds of times just by watching them and watching the videotape. They're looking at the guy's hands. Now, you will see a defensive back turn around on occasion. And part of that, again, is instinctive to think that maybe they can make a play on the ball. They feel like they can make a play on the ball, they're going to turn around. If they're not certain, or they don't think they can make a play on the ball, and that's two out of three, you focus on the hands. And that's how these defensive backs are coached. Now, you can certainly disagree with that being the proper way to coach technique. I tend to kind of leave this up to the experts. But at the same time, you can also say, well, it's not working. So what are we going to do differently? Do we get somebody else in there that can coach these guys differently? I'm not sure that that's the right thing to do. And I'm not sure that you can even do that, you know, not even before you get to the midseason point, although the Philadelphia Eagles today fired their defensive coordinator. Mike Holmgren is stepping down, you know, as the head of the Cleveland Browns today. So teams are already kind of thinking, all right, maybe we need to shake things up a little bit. And frankly, based on the play of the secondary this last week, I'm of the opinion that, yeah, maybe some things should be shaken up. Now, I don't think you can change fundamentally the way you coach the position at this stage of the season. I'm not sure that can get done. You might be able to add some things to the equation, but I don't know if you can say, okay, forget what we've taught you over the last 3 months, 2 months, forget it. We're going to do it a different way. It's not that easy. It's just not that easy. And I think you realize it's not that easy. What you can do, however, though, is put different players in there and tell them that, you know, look, it's this simple. Either you begin to make plays or you're coming out. So in this regard, Alphonso Dennard gets plenty of time. And even if he makes mistakes, guess what? You got a seventh round rookie draft pick in there that's playing. So quite frankly, I'd just as soon take my chances with someone like that. You know, I don't think Devin McCourty played all that horribly except for getting burnt on one of the early scores. I'm not sure where Kyle Arrington was. The safeties were once again horrible. And now Patrick Chung is hurt, along with Steve Gregory hurt. And I don't understand what's wrong with the safeties, but they have been all season long subpar. And they're providing no help. And then, of course, on the game-winning touchdown, those guys were clueless. Clueless in Seattle. Not sleepless in Seattle. Clueless in Seattle. So, you know what? We can nitpick about it if you want to. That has to be my number one nitpick of the entire game. Forget the fact that the offense was 1-for-6 in the red zone. The overall play of the secondary was not even up to collegiate standards. It was so poor. I mean, really. It was like putting high school kids out there against professional receivers. It was that bad. It was just horrific. I haven't seen much play like that in my 25 years of covering the New England Patriots. I really haven't. I can't remember a single instance where I really thought that on every deep ball, the Patriots were beaten. Every deep ball, the Patriots were beaten. Wow. Just wow. That's my number one nitpick, okay? I'm sure you have yours, and that's why we call this Nitpick Tuesday. It's an occasion for us to sort of work the problems out, see if we can overcome our grief, our difficulties with it, you know, see if we can't reason out why things happened, or better than anything else, just get it off your chest, because after today, in fact, we're actually going to start turning the page toward the Jets in the show today. Just a smidge, I will give you a programming update. I will be on the road tomorrow, and this program will be replaying in this time slot tomorrow. And the reason is because I'll be involved in Big East Basketball Media Day all day in New York City tomorrow. And I'll tell you how you can tune in on that if you're up to into any college basketball as well. But we'll be live on the net for about 3.5 hours tomorrow. And then I'll be on a train coming back to Boston and New England tomorrow from New York. So that's why I will be unavailable tomorrow, but this program will play again. So I do want to turn the page just a bit toward the Jets today by the end of the program. And we'll do that. And then Thursday it will be all Jets all the time. And you can certainly imagine that it should be all Jets all the time. So that's part of what we got going on today. And I'm hopeful that you will also contribute to the program. Email webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-298-0398. 508-298-0398. Two ways via social media to reach us on the program. You can hit me up at john.rook, R-O-O-K-E, on Facebook. And if you haven't submitted a friend request, please do so. And then we can chat and exchange messages on the Facebook page. You can also hit me up on Twitter. And the Twitter address is @jrook0722. @jrook0722. So there's Twitter. We can do that during the program as well. We lead it off with Nathan in Southern California. Nathan, you're in the playbook.
John, how you doing?
I'm okay today, Nathan. How are you?
Good. I want to talk to you about a couple things, both of which you addressed already. One was the coaching on the secondary.
Yep.
Is there any way, now I know this is blasphemous, John, but is there any way that some of the coaching in the secondary is the problem, not the players?
There's no question that it could be that the guys that they have playing these positions may not be able to fundamentally pick up what this coaching staff wants to do. And I've already explained how this coaching staff coaches the members of the secondary to defend the ball. It may very well be that, you know, the coaches have to figure out a way to play to whatever strengths they can deem appropriate for these guys in the secondary. And there's a disconnect there. How else can it possibly go from bad to worse? We thought we were seeing some improvement a couple of weeks ago, did we not? And now it just bottoms out to the point where they didn't even look like professional football players out there on Sunday. You're going up against Russell frigging Wilson, all right? Now, I don't want to take anything away from him in the game that he had, because he was very good.
And it wasn't as much as he was so good too, John. It was like the secondary was so bad.
That's exactly the point I was going to make. That's exactly the point I was going to make. The secondary was so bad, they made him look good. The Patriots are known for making mincemeat out of rookie quarterbacks. And not only did they not make mincemeat out of it, they got hit in the face by Russell Wilson. That should not have happened. There's no excuse for that.
Do you think that might explain why McCourty, his rookie year, everybody said he had such great instincts. He knew exactly when to turn and play the ball. And then after another year of coaching, he started letting up on his guy, and he just started missing his receiver by sometimes 5-10 yards and just playing, you know, with too much space in between him and his receiver. I mean, I don't know. I'm just trying to come up with some way to explain why the secondary's taking such a dip, because I can't conceivably come up with any reason. Those guys are too talented physically to make some of the mistakes that they made.
I don't disagree, and I think you make some very good points, and I really do believe that McCourty, Devin, he's thinking too much out there.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to talk about, John, was I'm getting a little bit scared this might turn out like the 2009 season where, you know, there was just some tension in the locker room. They just didn't have the cohesion on the field. Offense got up on score, but they couldn't hold on to a lead, and the defense gave up big plays at the end. I think this week at the Jets is going to be a really big indicator. I mean, not just if the Patriots win, but how they win. Even if they win, it could still not be a great win if the Jets come back and get some confidence in the end. But if they really show up for a full 60 minutes and show character and have the ability to rebound, I really think that can say a lot about this team, and that's what I look forward to. Thanks for taking my call, John.
All right, Nathan. I don't disagree at all. I think that this is a significant bench watermark for this team this week, you know, and we're only in, you know, week 7 of the season, so we're not quite at the halfway point, but at the same time, it stands to reason that if the Jets can't get your boat floated, then nobody's going to. It's a divisional rival. All four teams, it's almost unprecedented, I think, at this time of year, all four teams in the AFC East are tied for first, and all four teams are tied for last. Everybody's 3-3. You begin to kind of look at it, and it's easy to see that 10 wins probably wins this division. probably wins this division. I think at this stage of the game now, unless somehow the Patriots were going to figure out a way to win out, I think you can pretty much kiss away a bye in the first round. Right now, if you're the Patriots, you have to worry about making the first round. And that would be a significant failure on this team and this organization to not take this team to the playoffs with the offense that they do have, 1-for-6 in the red zone this last weekend notwithstanding. That would be an unmitigated disaster. And some heads would have to roll. We'll have to let this thing play out. It's, you know, way too early in the process. There are still 10 weeks of football left to play. And you certainly can see that the schedule is going to be favorable for New England down the stretch run to the point where, well, if they can get on a roll, maybe they can figure out, you know, a way to do this. But let me also offer this as part of the equation here. Let me also offer something that I've mentioned periodically throughout the first few weeks of this season. And I want to mention it here, so everybody make sure now that you lock it down, record it, understand it, and then we will revisit it from time to time. This team is a younger team, okay? Younger team. This team, save for Tom Brady and really Vince Wilfork, doesn't have the kind of experience that we're expecting this team to have. It doesn't have the kind of experience that we have seen from this team over the last several years. This team is largely young, save for just a few key players. And I think you realize where this team is young, where this team is green, where this team is still learning and trying to develop. And one of the things that is a tremendous bench water for young and developing teams is the ability to apply the knockout punch. And so what we've seen over the last few weeks, this team's inability to deliver a knockout punch is a byproduct of the overall immaturity of the New England Patriots. Now you say, well, they've got Brady. You know, well, yeah, they do. But see, Tom can only throw the ball. He can only call out the signals. He can only call the plays that are actually being called by Josh McDaniels. You still have to have players execute those plays. And if the players aren't in the positions where they need to be, then it's going to be difficult for Tom Brady to really do anything about it. So the point here is that, yes, I do believe that Tom needs to step up and be the demonstrative leader that we've seen him be in the past. And I think he has not been that kind of guy. We need to see him get more vocal and more, you know, involved on the sidelines or what have you. Or he needs to take more of a huge, a bigger silent role during the week here at the stadium in preparation for the weekend's upcoming game. But Brady's got to be the guy. Wilfork has got to be the guy. And then some of these younger players have also got to step up and be guys themselves. Mayo, Spikes, on offense, Gronk, Hernandez. I hesitate to say Welker because I think you know as well as I do, Wes Welker isn't going to be here next year. I hope that that changes, but I've maintained that from day one this season. I still maintain it. I don't see a scenario right now where the Patriots re-up him. I hope I'm wrong, but right now I don't see it. You could certainly make an argument that this team would be up or you-know-what without a you-know-what, without Wes Welker. So this team is learning how to put teams away. They can perform. They're very talented. Secondary notwithstanding right now. Back seven, really, defensively notwithstanding. But they're still learning how to win. They need to step that up big time, right away. All right, back to the phones. Tyrone in Delaware is up next. Tyrone, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing, sir?
Good, Tyrone. What's up, man?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about what you were saying. Your previous caller called and he said it's the coaching. I really don't think so, and I just want to say it's not really the young players. I'm not mad at Tavon Wilson. Said he's a rookie. Ebner is a rookie. Those two are rookies. So, I mean, to be bashing them it's kind of wrong. Since Kavon Wilson been in the lineup, he has been making some plays.
Yeah.
Also, Dennard also. So we can't be bashing them. The ones I want to bash is the Mayos of the world. He getting $50 million. And I don't know. That's to me, when they gave him that much money, he don't make no plays at all. I mean, the guy's a nice guy. I like him. He's a good dude. But how much times he make plays? For a middle linebacker?
Yeah.
He don't make nothing. So if I'm going to blame somebody, got to bring the older guys. Vince Wilfork, you know, he pours his heart out. But he ain't nothing much he could do. Mm-hmm. We already know that defense was going to be something like this. What I'm upset about is that they got one of the greatest quarterbacks, arguably, we have. What I'm upset about, why are you going so young? I think we're supposed to be trying to win now while we have Brady and not go too young too quickly.
Yeah.
But sign decent guys. Like, they was looking at Carlos Rogers. Nash, was it last year or the year before? But he went to San Francisco. That would have been, you know, he's a nice 60, you know? And but they didn't want to go that route. So what I'm saying is, it all goes down to personnel, you know? And what I was telling the guys before, offensive side of the ball. I know this since last year, and this is a fact. This is not me talking. And if everybody want to be honest with themselves, I'm just from since last year, whenever we faced defenses that got who is good, because the guy was talking about coaching. The defense with the Seahawks, I don't think it's coaching with them guys. It's just ability. They fast. They, you know what I'm saying? They fast. They're not flying to the ball. That's ability more than coaching.
All right, Tyrone, let me get to the point here then. Your biggest problem then, it seems, if I'm catching you correctly here, your biggest problem here then would have to be with evaluating the talent that they have, that they bring in?
Well, I've been screaming that for years.
Okay.
So, yes, that's of course, that's what it is. I mean, seriously, now on the offensive side of the ball, I'm noticing that we're trying to go downfield with a tight end, right?
Okay.
You need speed on the outside. I ain't talking about Randy Moss speed or whatever, but I think that's our weakness, and that would open up everything else in the middle. You don't got to be Randy Moss, but you need that threat, like the Pittsburgh, like did you see what New York Giants, if anybody say that our offense is better than New York Giants, them cool and fooling themselves. You saw what they did in San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
They got Cruz, they got Manningham. They could get downfield quickly and they could get separation. The reason why Tom Brady was forcing the ball is nobody wasn't open in the red zone. Nobody was, because it takes them
well, but in the red zone,
away from the secondary play.
Right.
If somebody was open right away, he would have thrown in the ball.
All right, but in the red zone, speed isn't going to make any difference. All right, it's the ability to run a correct route, and it's the ability to call the right play, which they did not do either of during the course of the game for the most part on Sunday. So I understand the speed aspect when you're trying to go between the 20s, and I think that there is some. There is something to what you're saying. But I think by and large, overall, Tyrone, the major problem here is still not lying with the offense. They failed miserably in the red zone, but frankly, that's almost one of the situations I think that, hey, you know what, you can kind of chalk it up to a bad game. What they failed really to do is they failed to show that they have any kind of talent to defend in the defensive backfield. And to me, that's the largest reason, the biggest reason why this team failed ultimately on Sunday. And Tyrone, thank you for the phone call. We're loaded up across the board here, so I want to get to some other calls. Let's say hello to Lars in Stockholm, Sweden. Lars, you're in the playbook. How are you?
I'm fine, and you, John?
Thank you, Lars. Thanks for the time today.
Thank you. You know, my nitpick, and I heard your good analysis that you did in the beginning of the show, but I would, you know, may sound surprising, but I would really emphasize, I would blame really more the offense for this game.
Okay.
What I didn't like, and I'm sure maybe most fans did, but the last drive of the second quarter really for me was just not acceptable. When you're 2 yards away from the end zone and you come up with 0 points, I mean, that's just something you can't do.
Well, there's no question that that was a huge factor. And if they, if all they had to do was kick that field goal at the end of the half and they win this football game, there's no way that Seattle comes back. That's how much this really should hurt today because, quite frankly, the Patriots have nobody to blame but themselves. This, the Seahawks did not win the game, okay? The Patriots lost the game. Huge, huge difference. And again, you know, hey, Seattle's out there fighting and give them credit for being in position to take advantage of the Patriots' mistakes. And you have to be pretty decent in order to do that. You don't want to just lay down, kind of like Buffalo did a few weeks ago. They just laid down and said, okay, good night. And Seattle didn't do that, so I give them credit for that. But the Patriots lost this game, and I knew that it was slipping away regardless of what the score was or how much time was left after they completely had an unmitigated disaster at the end of the second quarter.
Yeah, no question. And also in the first quarter, you know, when Chandler Jones, when the defense forces three and outs right away, and they really had good field position on offense. And of course, the when Brady forced the ball in the red, that was really a bad lack of awareness. And it's really, and it's basically three good scoring opportunities that you waste. And it's not that common for the Patriots because last year in 2010, they had a lot of blowouts and they scored on a lot of these situations. So I was surprised, but it was a good effort by the Seahawks. But I really thought, you know, lack of awareness by the Patriots on offense. And sure, the secondary really gave us bad plays. But honestly, if they had scored, you know, I'm not sure we'd be talking so much about the secondary, even though there is still a lot of questions.
Well, you know what?
To a wider point.
Sure.
And then I'll finish.
Lars, I was going to say here is that even if they scored there at the end of the half and somehow won that game, you know, 26-24 or whatever it was, we'd still be griping today about what? The secondary.
Oh, no question. But on the run defense was quite good. You know, he had 2.7 average per carry, Marshall Lynch. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of black and white, you see.
No question. Right, right. I agree with that.
Okay, but I'll just finish my last point.
Sure.
It's not, you know, compared to some of the losses that the team like the Texans and the 49ers had at home, it's not so alarming, even though Texans have a better record. But honestly, it's not the kind of loss that makes you want to, you know, press on the fire bell. Anyway, that was it.
You know, Lars, that's a great call. I mean, that's actually a good point. You're right. I mean, it is a team that is in contention in its own division, got a shot at the playoffs. The NFC West arguably is greatly improved. I don't think you can even argue that. But every team in that division could be a playoff team, and that includes who the Patriots play in a week after this next, St. Louis in London. So, you know, you're right. It may not be a panic button game, but I'm my finger is about ready to press it depending upon what happens this week against the Jets. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
By the way, what's the temperature in Stockholm today?
Oh, you know what? It was not that cold, but it will get colder in the next weeks. It was quite sunny actually today.
Nice. Glad to hear that. Thanks
Good luck with the Longhorns, by the way.
Thanks for bringing that up, pal. Appreciate that.
No, thanks. Okay, bye.
All right, take care. Yeah, he had to bring that up. He was giving me hell, I think. I think this is the same Lars that's giving me hell on my Facebook page after Oklahoma trashed Texas this weekend. I know that Strippers is a very happy man. Very, very happy man. And frankly, I'm that was embarrassing is all that was. Just flat out embarrassing. All right, here we go. Chris in Connecticut. Chris, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, man.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, Chris, for taking the time today. Welcome in the playbook.
You're the best, John. Listen, I see who problems are there. I'm not happy with Tom, but I still think everyone can have a bad day. But what I want Tom to do is do some Peyton Manning-ness kind of. If you go out there with a play that Josh calls and you see something different, change it.
Yeah.
It seems as if Tom is just sticking to what Josh McDaniels is doing, so he's making some simple mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, on the defense, the owner, come on, pay some coaches to do, you know, to get the best out of these guys. Look at Patrick Chung when he just came in.
That could be. I mean, again, something that we have talked about a little bit. The fact is that the personnel that they have back there and the technique that they're teaching them to play is clearly not working. There's a disconnect. And it seems it seems to be getting progressively worse, not better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Look at McCarty when he is rookie year.
Yep.
I keep telling you, they're all regressing. It's coaching. We need real coaches back there. Ty Law, bring Mangini back, even though I don't like that guy.
Well, I was waiting for that one to happen yesterday on Patriots Monday. I thought maybe they actually somebody would have the guts to ask Bill. So you kind of need some help back there. How about Eric Mangini? But I don't think that would have gone over real big.
I know. I probably wouldn't, but we really need some coaches. You could see it. It's obvious. These guys are regressing big time. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, let's put it this way. There will be moves made if this thing continues to happen. There can't not be. I know that's a double negative, but there has to be something happen, especially if this thing continues to spiral out of control. This week is the week to stop it. We'll know more. We'll know more by this time next week.
All right, John. Thank you for listening. I'm just an upset Patriot fan right now. I'm really hurt.
I'm right there with you, brother. I think most every Patriot fan is right there with you too. There's no way anybody thought this team would be 3-3.
Yeah, and I feel bad for Rex Ryan Sunday.
I hope you're right. Hey, by the way, isn't Rex Ryan? I mean, just when we need a little pick me up, isn't it just great that he's always around?
Oh my God, it's beautiful. He's such a good guy. Like Rex, you should send him a gift for this one.
That's all we need, you know. When he said that yesterday, he says, you know, I want the Patriots to know we're going to beat their ass or whatever it was that he said. I laughed out loud. I literally LOL'd, and I don't do that a lot when I'm listening on the radio, but I laughed out loud and I said, thank you, Rex. That's just what we needed around here.
Yeah, I know. I said, yes, I must follow that. Better, what are you cheering for? I'm like, a blowout on Sunday.
No question. No question.
And thank you for listening, man.
All right. All right, Chris. Thanks for the phone call, buddy. Appreciate it. All right, let's continue on the phones. Again, it's 508-298-0398 on the Ace Ticket Hotline here on a Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots.com Radio and Patriots Playbook. Up next is our friend Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. Hey, Al.
Hey, John. I think we must be in tough shape if we're starting to worry the people in Sweden.
No kidding, huh?
You know, I mean, these are the most laid back. Everything's fine. You know, when you're starting to get cranky, you know, semi-cranky calls from Sweden, you know that we got to, you know, we got to take stock here.
No. Why don't you go back home to your street malls and drink your Zimas and Smirnoff ices? Yeah. Oh, yeah!
Thank you.
That's perfect.
Good
call there, Kev.
No sweat. Listen, I normally call in a nitpick about the clock management at the end of the game.
Yeah.
But, of course, as you just mentioned, I agree with you 1,000%. You know, this time it was at the end of the first half.
Oh, that was – I mean, honestly, I've seen high school teams – I've seen peewee teams handle it better.
That was just awful. I mean, normally we're very good at the end of the first half, as we've discussed before, but this just blew up. I have no idea what – look, we had the ball on the 24-yard line with 40 seconds to go. With two timeouts.
I know.
I mean, we're set up like a bowling pin.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we are set up to score. At least get a field goal.
I know.
And I'm one of these people that I don't mind field goals. You know, I it's okay. It's 3 points. It's 3 points you didn't think you were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So the first play, we hit Welker inside the 10. And at that point, John, again, as I mentioned in the past, we're in a situation where we have two choices, neither one of which are bad. We have two choices once Welker hits the ground with that ball inside the 10. Number one choice, burn one of your two timeouts.
Right.
Now, personally, that would not have been my choice, but that would have been a good choice. You stop the clock with, 34, 35 seconds, I think, when Welker hits the ground, and you regroup and figure out, you know, what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or, personally, my choice, when you get down inside the 10 and you don't really need that many plays, you just need to hit one in the end zone, I would have run up and spiked the ball to stop the clock and save the second timeout.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, you know, either way, either one of those choices you could easily defend. What you can't defend is what we did, which is what we run up to the line of scrimmage, Brady's waving people. No, stand over there. No, move this way. No, no, you're out of. Get over there. And tick, 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 tick. And, you know, it finally gets down to, you know, 19 seconds, and Belichick has to come running down the sideline, grab the official by the neck, and call a timeout.
Yeah, it was almost as if they were too nonchalant about it. And I agree. I don't know what the particulars were there, and I'd like to go back and look at the personnel groupings during that time. But it seemed to me that we
had on first down was the same group that we were going.
I know
that which, Brady wanted to keep on second down.
Which would then tell me that that team should have understood the situation a little bit better and performed under duress a lot better. It's not like there were a bunch of rookies who had really hadn't had much practice doing that before, but that they pretty much had the A team, whatever the A team would be, but they had it out there and they should have been able to produce in that juncture, and they obviously failed miserably.
Well, you know, maybe after 5 seconds or so of tick, 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 maybe Brady should have figured out that they weren't lining up correctly, and instead of burning 15 or 16 seconds needlessly, maybe we only burn 4 or 5. You know, I mean,
it's not his call, though.
Tom's got to
figure it out, too. That's not his call. Belichick acknowledged that yesterday, Al.
What's that now?
That's not Brady's call. He was not permitted to call a timeout right there.
He was not permitted to call a timeout?
No, Belichick acknowledged it yesterday. He took responsibility. He said that's not the player's
Belichick's
call.
Belichick's falling on the sword, and God bless Bill Belichick. But, you know.
I think that has a lot to do with it, though.
Well, as I've said before, they don't pay me the kind of money to know really what happens and who's supposed to do what and all the roles of the offensive coordinator versus the coach versus the quarterback. All I know is we burned 16 seconds needlessly.
Yeah.
We got absolutely nothing accomplished. Now, okay, so we finally take the timeout, and there's 19 seconds to go after they adjust the clock. And we got one timeout left. The next play, Welker over the middle down to the 3. All right, we're going to come up, run up, and then we got another decision to make at that point because we're not in the end zone, and the clock's ticking again. You know, do we burn that last timeout or do we run up and spike it? I think at this point, you really got to run up and spike it. Even though that wastes a play, you've still got another play, and you're keeping your timeout. And the reason why that's important is when you get to third down, even though you've spent second down on a spike, admittedly, and you're third and goal from the 3, at least you preserve all the playbook. You know that you can either run or pass. You can do anything you want because if you run the ball and you don't make it in, you can burn your last timeout and kick the field goal.
Okay.
Or you can try to throw it in the end zone.
Okay.
But if you burn that last timeout on like we did, then the defense knows at that point that you must throw in the end zone. And there's no deception left.
Right. I got you.
And so, you know, what happens? Brady throws one into a guy's face mask. It was incredible. It wasn't intercepted. And then the last play, everybody blames, you know, everybody gets upset about the intentional grounding. And, you know, but, I mean, he was set up. He set himself up, or Belichick, or whoever's involved in this stuff, at the last, was set up to have an intentional grounding because we mismanaged the clock in the situation to the point where you've got 6 seconds and one play that has to be a pass, and, you know, he ends up with an intentional grounding.
Okay. All right.
So, it was just more bizarre decision-making. Whoever is making these decisions, none of us know. Belichick can fall on his sword and take the blame. God bless him. But I don't know who. I just know that we got to think these things through a little more. If he is more involved in making that decision, in making all those calls down the stretch, then why is he running in, you know, after 10 or 12 seconds to run down and grab the ref and call that timeout? If he was involved, he should have been down there to start with.
Because he won.
If he's really, you know, managing that situation. Why is he running in after the fact if he's really that involved? So I'm having a hard time buying that one.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right.
Okay? But look, we can run that rabbit, you know, up all over the place and chase it everywhere.
Right.
But here's the other thing you're saying that I also agree with is the defensive back, and you know, you think about since Ty Law retired, other than Asante Samuel and Rodney Harrison, who have we really drafted out of all the people we've drafted? And who have we really brought in as a free agent out of all the people we've run in and out of there as a free agent that have really, you know, produced anything consistently other than those two guys?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. And, you know, again,
Devin McCourty would be about it.
It'd be about it. And he had that one good year. And, you know, I mean, I hate to keep coming back to the coach, but, you know, the first thing that Bill Belichick ever coached in pro football was defensive backs with the Detroit Lions.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if maybe, you know, maybe he's just a little too fussy with what he's looking for. I don't know. But he's supposed to. I mean, that's the first thing he coached. And it's the worst thing we've got.
Well, here's the only way I think that you can probably attack that. Number one is I think you have to realize that the guys that you're bringing in, you're looking for value. That's basically what they're doing. They're looking for guys that, you know, are somewhat flawed. You know, when they brought in, you know, Tavon Wilson, second round, third round, they brought in Rashad Dowling, you know, second round. It could have been a first rounder, but, you know, had injury problems, and how's that worked out for them? So they're looking for value. What they need to do is they need to identify who the top performers are at the position and decide which one I think specifically they're going to go after. Because if they don't do that, then they're going to run the risk of doing the same thing over and over and over again, and they're never going to improve the problem. So this is all about evaluation, and it's all about, you know, deciding, okay, look, we've tried it this way. It hasn't worked. We haven't really struck gold with anybody, although I still think Tavon Wilson is going to be a good player. And maybe you have to try a different approach. Maybe you also go the free agent route. Maybe you go the trade route, something along those lines as far as cornerbacks are concerned, and continue to go the safety route like you have been, because they've had, I think, more success with safeties in this instance than they have certainly with cornerbacks. And Al, thank you for the phone call. Going to move on here. Ken in North Carolina up next in the playbook. Hey, Ken.
Hey, man. How are you doing, John?
Good.
Well, like everybody else, very, very depressing week.
Yeah.
My nitpick. Every week we hear defensive backs, defensive backs, defensive backs.
Yeah.
And we're going to work harder. We're going to get it right. We're going to do all the right things. Nobody has said how we're going to do it. Obviously, working harder at it ain't working. Now, I've got to say, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to kind of put it on the coaches.
Yep.
Brian Flores and Josh Boyer. And I think Coach Bill needs to spend some time coaching his defensive backs, or his defensive coordinators.
Mm-hmm. He should be more hands-on, Ken. I don't disagree with that at all.
I mean,
I'm not sure why he's not.
Guys,
but he should be.
They cannot. You know, these guys that are playing on the field are professional football players. They played for college. They're good players. They're not stupid. But it is the same problem every week. And I don't know if these guys are going, well, you guys are doing great. I don't know. But we need, and I'm not saying that they should be fired. I think that Bill Belichick needs to coach his coaches more strongly than he is coaching them and hold them more accountable.
No question.
Because it ain't getting solved. I don't care what you say, how you cut it, it is not getting solved. And as long as everybody in the NFL, every team in the NFL, knows all you have to do is throw a deep pass, middle of the field or side, hey, we got a 40, 50-yard run or a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
That is inexcusable. Now, they're not big, I'll grant you. It's not like they have them in Seattle, that did make jerks out of us. However, they should, I mean, right now, if you threw a deep pass, you got one of two things that are going to happen. Either the defensive back is going to commit a penalty, and you're going to get a first down, wherever that was done, or you got a big game.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, nothing has been changed. Nothing has been brought. Matter of fact, they did better early in the season than they're doing right now.
Yeah, they seem to have regressed, Ken. There's no doubt about that. And I think that, again, the only way to really solve the problem, at least at this stage of the game, has to be to, renew some things fundamentally, but B, you're going to have to make sure that you've got health back there. And now it looks like, you know, the safety position is all banged up. We don't know yet what, you know, Patrick Chung's availability is going to be. We don't know when Steve Gregory could possibly be back in there. That's why we saw basically two rookies back there at the end of the game giving up the big touchdown. So, you know, it was just a situation of largely.
Listen. The New England Patriots is a professional football team.
Well, we're going to have to get past that. We know that. We know what we should expect of the Patriots. But the bottom line is they haven't produced. So what do we do in the short term? We know what we can expect, and if they don't produce, we can sit and we can hammer our heads, you know, up against the brick wall until they bleed, but it still won't change things. So in order to change things, the only way that you're going to be able to change it, at least in my estimation at this stage of the game, is at the very least continue to play the younger guys to see if they can possibly give you something on down the line. And whether or not that's Dennard.
I'm not disputing that, John. But you know what? We're taking three of our seven front line and sort of having to help them out. And that, we can't have that.
Well, we know. So, but again, we're going to get back to the original point here. The defense, the secondary is what it is.
Yes, and I think that Coach Belichick needs to coach his coaches up.
I don't disagree with that at all. I don't disagree with that at all. He has to take a more active role in trying to figure out what the problem is here, because fundamentally they're not doing it right.
Those two guys are not on the CBA. They, you know, they can, they don't only have to be there during regular hours. And I run a company, and boy, I'll tell you, if I got a problem in one area, I don't mind sitting here until 10 o'clock at night.
Well,
and that guy's going to sit here until 10 o'clock at night.
Ken, rest assured, these guys are here till all hours of the night. And I'm sure right now with the fact that, you know, this team is 3-3 and nobody expected it to be 3-3, I'm sure that every waking hour, every waking moment is being spent studying film, devising game plans, trying to figure out coaching techniques, whatever it may be. But I cannot imagine that wouldn't be the case. Ken, thanks. We got to move on because we still got other phone calls we want to get to. Melvin in Tennessee. Thanks for hanging on, Mel. You're in the playbook.
Hey, Rob. Hey, how you doing?
Good, Melvin.
Well, I guess everybody's beaten to death the idea of the defensive backfield. I don't even know what the issue is, what they need to fix, but I was still in question of the play. I knew they were about to go long. So I didn't see how it was almost a man-to-man and two rookie safeties back there. I was a little bit confused by that play call at the end when you knew that they were going for the end zone. And I don't know, maybe I ran a cover four and had some more deep protection, but I feel like, did it almost look like a cover two to you?
Yeah, they were in cover two most of the way, I think, during the game. So that's the thing that really bothers me the most. There was very little man coverage, and they were still getting friggin' hammered back there. And I'm like, what are they doing? There was no communication at all. And a lot of that in the past has really kind of been on Patrick Chung's shoulders to call some of those signals. And I'm at a complete loss for words. Nobody seemed to be on the same page. And somebody needs to step up this week and take responsibility for that.
Yeah, well,
cover two is supposed to be a defense that, you know, is really one of the best zone defenses that out there. And if you're in a zone, you shouldn't get beat like that. And there should always be safety help over the top. And there wasn't any. It was a major, major malfunction. It really could not have been much worse than it was. So I guess really, if you want to look at the positive side of things, Melvin, can't get any worse than what we saw, I don't think, on Sunday.
Right. And the positive thing is, I wouldn't expect this thing to be, I still expected a 4-2. If anything, I would expect the loss to be Baltimore into the,
I expected. I expected 5-1. Okay, after 6 weeks, I really thought this team would be 5-1, and so you can almost understand the Arizona game because they always manage to cough one up. They cough up a furball, with somebody every year. Okay, and so you can almost chalk that up to Arizona that being the furball that they hack up. But this past Sunday, Seattle is an okay team. I don't think that Seattle team is going to make the playoffs in the NFC West. I think they're the third best team in that division. That's just my opinion. And because of that, this is going to end up not being a very good loss. They may be a decent team, but I think that division is stronger this year, and I'd be surprised if Seattle makes the playoffs. Therefore, not a good loss. It might be a good loss now. It won't be a good loss by the end of the year. Now, the only other thing you can say is that at least it's an NFC team. But at the same time, though, these are missed opportunities. Missed opportunities in terms of games being played, tiebreakers being won or lost, momentum being gained, so you can try to get a run together. Because as we all know, this is a season, this is a sport of streaks, and you hope to be going in the right direction. And it just seems that this team is unnecessarily shooting itself in the foot right now. And I think we all want them to be on the same page in December more than anything else. But if you shoot yourself enough in the foot, right now you're not going to have a foot left to stand on in December.
Right. And I could have sworn, if there's one thing that I could have guaranteed looking at this schedule, especially last year, and now I could have sworn that this team was going to be on a bye week for the playoffs. This is a 1-2 team, maybe. There should be no reason that this team is playing first wild card weekend.
I agree. Melvin, you're spot on. I mean, this is still, in my estimation, when you look at this team, even with the youth, even with the inexperience, even with the mistakes that they're making, when you look at the talent on this roster, okay, unless we're all way off base on evaluating this talent, and I don't think we are, that this is still one of the three best teams in the AFC in terms of talent.
Right. And like I said,
and one of those other teams, by the way, just got nailed by injuries this weekend in Baltimore.
Right. And then, I mean, even the Texans are injury prone, and with Cushing's out already with a, I mean,
that's right.
Run pops or something.
That's right. And that's a good point. And Houston is, yeah, I mean, we saw what happened to Houston this weekend. So
right. And they played their first real team and got spanked.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Last thing I got to say is that we've improved everything. The offensive line has come together.
Yep.
Like I said, we've got tight ends for days.
Yeah,
we've got running backs, Olympic sprinters, on IR for no reason. Even Woodhead, Woodhead's running better. I mean, we had almost too many. I mean, running backs is overload.
Mm-hmm.
We have every answer for everything but defensive backfield. Everything. This team needs to focus on its main weakness. That should have been its main weakness last year. We had problems with defensive backfield. I mean, we need to fix that problem first. And just bringing in, even though he did help to improve it, Steve Gregory, especially that Baltimore pick, he's made some plays, but that's not enough.
We got to get him healthy, man. Got to get him healthy. They're not worth anything if we can't get healthy. And you know what?
Right.
I'm of the opinion, and I heard somebody say this, I don't even remember where it was, within the last 24, 48 hours since the game was over. Good players find a way to stay on the field. Okay? I'm sorry. Good players, the superior athlete figures out a way to get on the field. I don't care unless, there's a torn ACL, and hey, Logan Mankin shot that one out of the water last year, didn't he? At least for a lineman. I mean, you couldn't be a running back or a receiver or a quarterback, or you couldn't be a skill position to play with a torn ACL. But all I'm saying is good players figure out a way to avoid injury or get healthy quicker. That's all I'm going to say.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, we've got to get healthy. And, I mean, this is the same situation from last year. We have no safeties now. What's going to happen now? That's the exact same. Now we're going to have receivers back out there playing DBs.
Well, frankly, I said this a couple of weeks ago, Melvin. I think some of the receivers should be defensive backs, as at least they know what's coming at them.
Right. We need to try something else because, obviously, like everybody said, obviously what we're doing is not working. So since it's costing the game and it's so big of an issue, not only that, you've been on Hail Marys. Same way from Baltimore game. It's cost you game. The problem needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's, you know, that's why this week is huge. This week is absolutely huge. We want to see, you know, because, you know, first of all, you have no Holmes to go against with the Jets. There's no Revis to go against on the other side of the ball. So there should be an opportunity, again, for the offense to move it. But can the defense hold it? And I think that's going to be a huge factor this week to look forward to. All right, let's get to a break here. 508-298-0398. That's the Ace Ticket Hotline. 508-298-0398. Lots of nitpicks today. I understand it. You need to get it off your chest. That's good. This is our, you know, come to Jesus meeting here today. We gotta make everything right with the world, and then we're gonna turn the page and we look at the Jets because the Patriots are gonna have kind of what they have. How do we get this team better? How do we get this team? How do we coach up this team? Is it coaching? Is it personnel? What is it? Whatever other nitpicks you've got, fire them off now right here in the playbook.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank. Member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder wait list and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012 Bank of America Corporation.
Have a nitpick about this week's game?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Well, John does too.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio.
Hour number two of the program here on Patriots.com Radio for a Tuesday. I'm John Rook. You know how to get in touch. So do it. Webradio at Patriots.com. The email address, the Ace Ticket Hotline again, 508-298-0398. Been burning up the phones today, and we're glad that you, you feel as passionately as you do. Passionately as you do. John.Rook on Facebook, at JRook0722 on Twitter. Strippers on Twitter sent this note. He goes, no doom, no gloom, never cheer injuries, but the Ravens are suddenly not AFC title contenders, and the Texans got crushed. Good for us. And that's certainly one way to, you know, put the focus on the task at hand. And the task at hand is now you got four teams at 3-3 in the AFC East, and you got to figure out a way to beat those other guys, because that's what it's all about now. Forget best record in the league. Forget, you know, put aside all talk of first round buys. Get that out of the way right now, because maybe that's part of the problem here. Who knows? Now you got to concentrate on just getting in the tournament and winning your division. Because it may very well be that a second place in this division doesn't get in as the wild card. 10-6 could easily, I think, could end up winning this division now. And if that's the case, 9-7 ain't going to cut it. Going to have to be at least 10-6 to probably be dancing somewhere. So that is the priority right now. And the priority's got to be to win your divisional games. And there is no more bigger divisional game than what you face with the Jets coming up this Sunday here at Gillette. That's huge. TJP on Twitter says, hopefully the Pats game is the highlight and not the closing ceremony of the season. I would hesitate to say that if they lost this Sunday to the Jets, that it would be the closing ceremony, because you'd still only be one game out, although technically two games behind whoever. If you lose the Jets, you'd be two behind the Jets, but you have a chance to catch up. It would make the Thanksgiving Day game a must win, I think, in that regard, because they'd have to figure out a way to split, and there's still a ton of football, 10 weeks still to play. So I wouldn't call it the closing ceremony, but I might be thinking of another act. I might be thinking of another act. I had several people. Here's another one from Patriots 47, XLVII, who says, four tuck and ducks by TB12 to avoid a sack that wasn't there. That is not a good sign for a 35-year-old quarterback. Hey, in all honesty, that's not a good sign for any quarterback. And you're right. The Brady's ability to just tuck it and duck, because he kind of feels the pressure coming from that offensive line, is not a good sign. And I think that's a byproduct of a couple of things. Number one, it's his offensive line, even though that they may have performed a little bit better over the last few weeks. Certainly, you'd have to say from a rushing game performance that they performed better up until this last week. And, hey, let's give Seattle some credit. Pretty good rush defense on Sunday. And they wanted to make the Patriots one-dimensional as possible. Well, they did that. And Brady did end up torching him for, what, 370 yards. But Patriots also shot themselves in the foot. Seahawks made the Patriots one-dimensional by pretty much taking the run out of the equation. and still had to have some help. So what does that tell you about Seattle as a team? Not great. Not great. But the four Tucking Ducks, A, offensive line, he still has some concerns on the corners. B, hate to say it, but 35 years old, there's some happy feet in there. He's not standing tall like, you know, the statue Tom we've seen in the past. That's a sign of protection as you get a little bit older and as you get a little bit further on in your NFL career. Older quarterbacks tend to do that. It's a fact of life. Go back through history. Take a look. One of the quarterbacks that used to do that a lot was actually Johnny Unitas. And he was a tremendous quarterback, one of the all-timers. Tucking Duck, though, later in his career. Older quarterbacks just do that. Why? Because they're trying to protect themselves more than anything else. You're younger, you're stronger, you think you can handle the world. Bring on all comers. But when you begin to show signs of wear and tear and age, you have a tendency to want to protect as much health as you possibly can. It's human nature taking over. That was a good tweet anyway. Thanks. The whole Sherman thing, talking, you know, crap to Brady after the game. I got several tweets on that as well. And quite frankly, Patrick Sherman, who the hell is he? So, I mean, if he wants to take his shots, you know, via Twitter, first of all, Tom doesn't tweet, so I'm not sure what kind of an effect it might have had on him. But, it's just, that's all yap, yap, yap. Who cares? They're not going to see the Seahawks again unless the Seahawks make the Super Bowl. And right now, even with these two teams standing the way they do, I'd still put the Patriots' chances of reaching the Super Bowl as better than Seattle's. So, guy wants to make a name for himself by, you know, talking trash to, you know, a future Hall of Fame quarterback. Let him do that. That's fine. It's only going to make him look bad in the end. So I think it's really much ado about nothing, to be quite honest with you. All right, Eldridge, thanks for hanging on. You're in the playbook. How's it going, Eldridge?
Fine, John. Just got a headache. How you doing?
Well, I hope it wasn't from waiting for me.
No, sir. It was Sunday.
Yeah,
Sunday.
Yeah.
I agree with that first caller a little bit, but, man, I think it's the coaches and the players. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, have you noticed the three games we lost, we was above them, and each time they go to McCourty, he do a bonehead play. Get burned in the end zone. He gives interference call each time. And it costs us. And I don't want, you know, everybody keeps saying, well, it's a team thing. No, he costs us.
Mm-hmm.
When you're ahead like that, you know, you don't do it. You've been there 3 years, you're supposed to be a professional. It costs us. And I don't care what anybody says. Tom, Chuck and Duck, you're right. Try to protect yourself because, you know, you got some years, few years left. And he ain't strong behind that line. Because that line had let him down in the beginning of the season, so he ain't quite got that trust yet.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, everybody, even the guys on PFW, keep shooting me in the foot. With all the talent we got with tight ends, running back, and Welcher, we need somebody that's fast and scared the H out of the defense. And Lord is not him. Branch can't outrun Thomas. Thomas is a damn good cornerback.
Yeah.
He always been that way. And Seattle got the best secondary. I've been saying that for 3 years.
Well,
they got the best secondary.
I would have to admit, I'd have to admit that Seattle at least has a formidable secondary in terms of their physicality. You know, and you can't argue with Pete Carroll's strategy here in going after the bigger corners and the more physical safeties. It certainly worked against the Patriots.
I wish we would do that.
Well,
I mean, I'm sitting back and I'm looking at, okay, we passed on Jenkins for the Rams. Well, Jenkins shut down one of the best wide receivers 2 weeks ago, and the Rams won.
Right.
You know, you passed up on it was another guy, number 29 for the Packers. I think his name is Garner. They got seven rounds. Shields went down. He shut down. He held down Johnson by himself.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, we can't get nobody like that. I think Bill evaluation is slipping. To be honest with you. You know, as far as coaching wise. I mean, you're on the 15-yard line. The offensive line, the other offensive team got 15 yards to go to the goal line. Why are you going to turn around like you got a 40-yard sprint instead of backpedaling? Turn your hips and look back at the quarterback like everybody else do. You do it at the camp. You do it when you come to the combine, and you do it when they evaluate you. Mm-hmm. What happens when you get to New England? I don't think nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
You know, and I have coaches in the right from Gaston. I know what Rice can do. And like I said, McCourty should have ran with him. McCourty should have ran with him. I know they was in quarters. Ain't nobody in the zone. And Wilson, like he was in another world, right through the double move, he burnt.
Well, but I'm willing to give Wilson the benefit of the doubt. I still like overall his ability, and I think he's going to end up being a keeper. We thought that about Devin McCourty, too, a few years ago. So
don't get me wrong. Now, I like Wilson. But like I said, McCourty should have ran with him. They should have been like double coverage.
Mm-hmm.
If a wide receiver come out burning like that, you know, you ain't going to jog with him. You're going to run with him. Because 9 out of 10, he's getting the ball, you know. And I think, be honest with you, I think they underestimated Wilson. I really do.
Okay. Fair enough.
I underestimated him. You know, that's a good quarterback.
Okay. You know,
Eldred,
here's the whole thing with the Patriots right now. As bad as it was, the fact of the matter is that they shot themselves in the foot. And if they don't shoot themselves in the foot, like I said earlier in the program, especially in that last sequence of plays before the first half, they still win this game. So they've lost three games by a grand total of 4 points. That's almost unheard of. And these are games that clearly in the past the Patriots have won, but right now they're not. So you could look at this one of several ways. You could certainly say, well, hey, it's what goes around comes around. Or you could say it's karma. Or you could say, well, it's a little payback. Or you could say, well, it's the Patriots having good fortune all these years and not having, you know, the breaks go their way. Maybe the odds are kind of evening out a little bit. The bottom line here is that this team is still immature in many, many ways. And I don't mean, you know, they're boys playing like men. I mean, what they are is that they just don't have the football savvy in order to know that you must buckle down and you must concentrate and you must have to put blinders on and not pay attention to the scoreboard when you get up 23-10. And you've got to be able to figure out a way to make plays when your team needs you to make them.
Yeah, I understand it, but don't you think they got the best motivated Bill to do that?
I don't think he's a motivator at all in that light. No. No, these guys have always relied on motivation from within. And in the past, they've had a few rah-rah guys like Teddy Bruschi in the locker room, which they do not have.
Yeah,
and so,
right,
and I don't think that we have that in this locker room.
Nope.
But at the same time, somebody needs to be demonstrative. Somebody needs to say, look, this ain't satisfactory. This isn't going to cut it. This is not the way we've always done things here in New England. And for you guys who haven't been here as long as me, I'm telling you, this needs to change and change now. And if it doesn't change, you have to answer to me. And the person I think that's qualified to do that is Vince Wilfork.
Vince Wilfork and Mayo.
I don't know why Mayo doesn't do that. I think Mayo defers to Vince, to be quite honest with you. And I don't know that that's Mayo's. I don't know if that's his style. I get the distinct impression that he's not really that kind of player. So you need Vince to step up defensively. You need Tom to continue to pound that home offensively and take, you know, and take, you know, credit for himself first and foremost, because he did also have, even though he had some pretty good passing yards numbers, he made some poor choices on Sunday that ended up costing them.
Like I said, I fought him too. Especially down on the goal line with Welcher, he just shot it in there.
Yeah.
He could have waited a little longer. He just could have waited 1 second more or 2 seconds more,
yeah,
and that would have been it, you know.
Right.
And Wichita would have had an interception. But also, man, back to that secondary and the wide receivers. You know, I'm sorry. We just don't have that talent there. You know, we got Grunk. Hernandez hurt a little bit. Grunk hurt, they're not 100% yet. Okay, Welcher, 83, love him. He steps up. But Welcher needs a little help, too. And to me, I don't see Branch stepping up like he used to. And he can't outrun nobody now.
Well, they have
nobody.
To be open. They have to be open, and you got to.
He can't get open. That's my point.
Okay.
He can't get open no more.
Okay, you know?
That's my point.
That may very well be.
And then Lloyd, like I said, that catch Lloyd dropped, though. He was halfway out the foul line. I don't know, he was out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
I fought Lloyd with 49ers up to Denver, and he used to make those catches. When, and like I said, 49ers, he wasn't the man. He was just one of the boys. We got the Denver and the Rams. The man, he made those catches.
Yeah.
I still think he got that impact in me. He's not really the man, so he's just one of the crew.
Okay.
You know, and he's not, to me, he ain't trying hard enough.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you've lost Hernandez for 3 weeks. You get him back. You just start working him into the equation. Obviously, he still needs to work himself back into some sort of full health scenario. And if he can do that, then maybe this offense can get back up to speed again. But here's another problem I think we're going to run into. I think we're going to run into a problem where this team is still trying to fundamentally change its way of moving the ball with a two tight end set as opposed to, you know, four or five wide and finding Welker over the middle. You know, those two things conflict, and they conflicted early in the year. And now that Hernandez is back, we've gone to Welker the last few weeks because we didn't really have any other choices. Now that Hernandez is back, what is he going to do to Welker, and is this going to stagnate the offense? And frankly, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that had something to do with some of the indecisions that were in the game this Sunday.
You got a point there, John. There might be. But, man, like I said, I understand they were thinking a little bit, but if you have somebody, I'm looking at the Ravens offense. You got two guys that can go deep. You got a good running game. And you got tight ends that can go deep and catch too. Okay, we got everything except for one. That's the receiver that can go deep and burn everybody and have the defense double. We ain't got nobody to double nobody except to try to double the tight end. Because our receivers do not scare nobody. Because maybe Welcher, but besides Welcher, nobody. And know what I'm saying? They're tied up on Welcher, and you look for Branch or you look for Edelman. To me, they're too short, too slow.
Yeah.
We need somebody else. And that's just the bottom line.
Well, then the only way that they can address that, and Eldridge, thanks for the phone call, is he's a good Patriots fan there in North Carolina. The only way they can address that is in the off season, and they've got to continue to see if they can't upgrade the talent. And that probably means stepping in and replacing Deion, and that's certainly going to mean stepping in and somehow replacing Welker. Whether or not it is going to be Julian Edelman, who's been hurt the last couple of weeks as well, we don't know. We really don't know that we can answer that. But that will still have to be addressed in the offseason. Can't do anything about it now. These are the guys you got. Let's get to some emails here. Webradio@patriots.com for your nitpicks. Here we go. This one comes from Joel. He says, I live in Atlanta, but I'm from Boston. The issues with the Pats defense is that Bill got away from defensive scheme. I remember during Bill's first years, it seemed like we had a different scheme for every team we played. Do you agree? I think a little bit, Joel. It did seem that like that. I would also suggest to you, though, that it's because a lot of it was brand new back then. I mean, we, you know, weren't privy to a lot of that in the previous regime, so therefore it seemed a little bit different to have a different scheme, if you will, a different game plan for every team, even though you game plan for every team. But it you know, and they still game plan and have a different scheme for every team that's out there now. It's just that we've seen so much over the years, maybe that's kind of the problem here. Maybe the opponents are also starting to catch up with it a little bit. I do like the fact, though, that some others of you are trying to, you know, get Bill back involved with coaching techniques or coaching up his assistants or whatever, because I think that's something that definitely has to happen. Jim in Florida says, John, wow, where to start, huh? Offense, defense, special teams maybe? Nah, I think I'll go right to the top of this week's nitpick, head coach Bill Belichick. First, every player on the Patriots roster and any Patriots player on the field on any given play is there because Belichick selected him. There was a time when Bill Belichick's Patriots team didn't lose. If the team had a fourth quarter lead and Belichick could game plan to shut down a rookie quarterback, but the Seahawks rookie QB shredded the Pats defense like he was Peyton Manning. And speaking of Manning, the Patriots have already lost two games this season, blowing two-score fourth-quarter leads. Almost lost a two-score fourth-quarter lead to Manning's Broncos last week, except for a Marshawn Lynch drop pass on fourth down and then a Marshawn Lynch fumble. I see what you're saying. Okay. So even though the most diehard Patriots fan squirms in the fourth quarter knowing no Patriots lead is safe, it's on the head coach to change it up on defense to ensure the opposition can't drive 80 or 90 yards in four or five plays with the game on the line. Well, yeah. Yeah, it goes without saying. But a lot of that also has to do with the play calling that's out there on the field and Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator. Patriots offense consistently lost focus, took its foot off the gas inside the red zone. Fourth quarter pass D was MIA. The head coach deserves a lot of the blame, mismanaging even our timeouts. He's touted to be a defensive genius, but when was the last time this team ever had a decent pass defense? And if this defense doesn't blitz more because it's designed not to give up the big play, guess what? It's not working. You know, that's the other thing. This team doesn't blitz. I think we've seen that it doesn't blitz. Few times have they managed to get a rush on Russell Wilson this last week. He is nimble enough to step out of the pocket and put a big gainer on. We've seen that. We saw that on several plays. One, I think, was called back on a hold, but you have to know that if you're going to, you have to, you know, there should be, frankly, there should be a spy on an opposing quarterback every week. Make sure that the quarterback doesn't get loose and turn a third and 15 into a first down. Jim also says in six games, the secondary has given up 33 plays of 20-plus yards already and 15 touchdown passes, a secondary Belichick himself handpicked and game plans for. Come on, Bill. Don't tell us after the loss the coaching staff needs to coach better. Coach better during the game. I don't know that there needs to be anything else said there. He's pretty much spot on. Yeah, they need to coach better. Because the last couple of weeks have been pretty bad. Neil in Glasgow, Scotland. John, first-time emailer to the show, although I originally sent this into the postgame show. I think I have my first major nitpick of the season. I thought I'd share it with you. Welcome, Neil. Rewind to the Gostkowski field goal early in the fourth quarter. I believe it was fourth and two with us up 10 points. Okay, sounds right. Given Belichick's aggressive play calling last week and in years gone past, would it have not made sense to just give it a shot at making the first down? Worst case scenario, you fail, they get the ball on the 25, still going to be a two-possession game. Go for it. There's a better than average chance you can convert and then really start to run some clock, perhaps get a touchdown or even settle for a field goal with another few vital minutes off the clock, which would have made all the difference come the end of the game. Would Belichick have settled for the field goal had it been last week and you had Manning standing on the sideline ready to go and not Russell Wilson, who, by the way, we made look like Manning with some of the downfield passing we let him get away with? Says it's one of the worst losses for me in the last 10 years of Patriots football. Neil, I think that's an excellent email. I think you bring up some very good points. I remember thinking at that time on that fourth down that this would be a very, very good chance and should have been a good chance for them to go, because at least what you do is you pin them a bit. It's still two possessions. And you got to make them go, you know, length of the field to make it a one-possession game. If you make the first down, then, yeah, then you got a chance to step on the jugular, right? Apply that, you know, killer instinct cross shot that we've been begging, we've been dying for this team to do. Put somebody away. And you finally do it. I just don't know why they're so gun-shy on that now. I mean, hey, think back to fourth and two at Indy a few years ago, right? Similar scenario. You want to try to put the game away. You want to make plays. Do you feel like you've got guys that can make plays or not? And clearly, if they don't go for it in this instance, they don't have the confidence in the team to make the play. Well, you're telling me you can't make 2 yards? 2 yards? Not buying it. I think that's a good nitpick, Neil. Very good nitpick. Bruce in Baltimore says, John, thank you for having a Nitpick Tuesday. This week I needed it. This is why we have Nitpick Tuesday, gang, because I recognize that Patriots fans, you know, especially those that are outside of New England and outside of the greater Boston Providence metro area, you don't have sports talk radio that deals with the Patriots, you know, 24/7 at this time of day and or at this this time of week, and you need a chance to vent and get it off your chest and somebody to talk to and somebody to listen to and somebody to reason with, and that's why we have it here. Anyway, Bruce says, after watching the Ravens extend their home record of consecutive wins with yet another statistically unlikely win, it was too much to see them, it was too much to then see the Pats game. I expected them to pull together, close the game out, fully felt let down when I knew, with more than 2 minutes left in the game clock, the Pats were going to methodically give this one away. I was so disgusted, I didn't even talk or read anything football for 24 hours. Kind of like me. Bruce says, my nitpick is the secondary. I know Bill has defended DP technique, but this is free yards for any offensive coordinator or rookie quarterback and must be fixed. All opposing teams have to do is throw it out 25 or 30 yards. You either get a catch or a penalty. Throw it behind the receiver so he has to adjust to come back and get the ball. If he avoids, well, then he gets the catch. If not, then the DB runs him over. And since he has no idea where the ball is, flag, free yards. It's already in the opposition game plans against the Pats because nothing has changed for years. Patriots need to deploy a better way to recover receivers while still keeping some idea about what the quarterback is doing. Well said. Well said. The painful result, we still have not eased the burden off Brady because he's under pressure to stay ahead of the leaky cauldron on the other side of the ball. And as long as Brady is key to a Patriots win, that just makes the opposing defensive job easy. You know, it's all good points, Bruce. You know, the defense unable to stand up and make a play, especially in the secondary, that keeps the pressure on Brady, that makes Brady press a little bit more, and he presses a little bit more knowing that he's not quite as reliable with his offensive line in front of him, and he's not quite as reliable with a couple of the receivers that may be out there trying to, you know, catch balls from him. He's not quite as assured that his running backs who are younger are going to be able to pick up the yardage necessary. There's just that little bit of doubt. And, of course, you're going to have a heck of a lot more confidence if you're the guy throwing and handing it off, if you know that your defense can make a stop or make a play. I'm begging for somebody to step up and make a play. Like I said earlier on the show, that back seven, somebody's got to step up. We're beginning to see some of it with Brandon Spikes. He needs help. He needs help. The front four is fine. I have no problems, no issues at all with the Patriots' defensive line. They're solid. They're spectacular at times. They can rush forward, and they can actually put some pressure on the quarterback. It's great. But the back seven needs help big time. Big time. I think, you know, I just don't understand why they don't, they should just throw caution to the wind, and they should just probably blitz. We need to see something more than just stay-at-home defense, because the stay-at-home part isn't working. John, the issues with the Pats defense is that Bill got away from defensive scheme. Oh, there we go. Okay, he sent that one before. Thank you, Joel. I answered that. Todd says, John, you mentioned that the Pats have no playmakers, and I disagree. We have plenty of playmakers against the run. This team is completely designed to stop the run, which would be great in 1973. Not sure it works as well today. With the exception of Jones, all our top players are great versus the run, from Wilfork to Love, Spikes, Mayo, even Chung and Mac and McCourty. Not sure how far a run-stuffing passing team can go if they can't stop anyone when we have the lead. Todd in Nova Scotia. Fair point, Todd. Fair point. They obviously need to figure out a way to play the pass. They can play the run well enough, but teams now are going to go over the top. If that isn't going to be the book on the Patriots, I don't know what else will be, but it's quite simple. You're going to go over the top. You're going to take a stab downfield. And as several emailers have already pointed out, one of two things will happen. One of three things will happen. And all of them, well, two of them bad for the Patriots. One, guy still catches the ball because the Patriots can't cover it. Two, Patriots defenders run into the guy, pass interference. The third thing is, of course, an incomplete pass. Ian from the UK. John, just a thought, but the safeties are getting slaughtered by everyone, and with good reason. What I don't understand is why we don't have the cornerbacks playing more bump and run. Surely this would not only help the pass rush, but also help the safeties as well. Yeah, Ian, I think we actually brought that up earlier in the year. But one of the major problems I think that I've had, that quite a few of us have had with the problems in the secondary, has to do with the fact that they just play too loose. There's too much cushion. They give away too many yards. They allow the receiver, you know, to make his break. I mean, how did we beat the Rams back in 2001? How did the Patriots defeat a team that was superior to them in almost every aspect? It was the best bump and run defense probably ever seen. They got physical. They played smash mouth. They jammed the receivers at the line of scrimmage. And why we've gotten away from that tendency, I'm not sure, but it's clearly not working this way. Now, maybe they feel like this team, you know, these guys aren't, you know, of the makeup in order to do that. Maybe they feel like they'll still get burnt. Well, guess what? They're already getting burnt. So maybe if you're buying an extra second, as Ian suggests, for the front four to be able to make a play and beat their man off the block in order to put pressure on the quarterback, I don't know. But we should be in press coverage more. I don't understand that. That fundamentally is, I just don't understand that. And the answer that we get from, you know, Belichick and anybody else who is, they ask the question is like, well, that's just our game plan for the week. Well, it stinks. It doesn't work. Your personnel can't do it. It's a fair criticism. Until we see them do it, they're open to the criticism. Press it. Bump and run. Maybe you get some 5-yard or maybe you get some illegal contact penalties. But at the very least, what you're doing is you're sending a message to those guys. I mean, what's better? You know, an illegal contact penalty for 5 or 10 yards or a 40-yard pass interference? Because that's what you're giving up here. I cannot figure that one out for the life of me. Why they don't press the attack more. I don't know. That's an issue we probably have to delve into a little bit more. We'll put that down on the list of things to discuss because, frankly, it's not working. It's not working giving up room. It's not working giving receivers cushion. They're getting hammered. They're getting hammered. Joe in Michigan says, John, I don't know what to take from this. Certainly, I can't figure out the positives. The most alarming thing to me is that it seems like we can't even be confident against teams that we know can't throw the ball. Russell Wilson looked like a veteran against the Patriots on most of his plays. He made the defense look absolutely horrible out there. I guess the best thing right now is that all teams in the AFC East are 3-3. We still have the best quarterback. He says, give me some hope. Well, I think you just gave yourself hope, Joe. Fact is, as I said earlier, this team is right in the thick of things in an AFC East that has 4 teams tied for first or 4 teams tied for last, depending on how you look at it. Everybody's 3-3. Everybody's 3-3. Which really, you know, well, you got to win the division first. You don't win the division, and it'd probably take 10 wins to win this division. You don't win the division, you may not get in this year. I don't think a wild card is going to come out of this division unless somehow 2 teams get hot, and I don't know that that happens. So you got to win this division. And to win the division, that puts extra emphasis on when you play divisional games. That happens this Sunday against the Jets. You got to win the game at home because you just don't know what you're ever going to get on the road. Patriots are playing the Jets on the road on a holiday again on Thanksgiving this year. So, this is about as must-win as you can get for Week 7. Again, I mentioned this earlier. I don't think it's catastrophic if they lost, but you'd be 3-4, and you'd be 2 games, in a sense, behind the Jets, which would make the game on Thanksgiving in New York must-win, in my opinion. And you'd probably have to win just about everything from here on out, in my opinion, in order to make this a serious, you know, threat. So you'd really put your butt up against a wall if you lose this game on Sunday. Not must win because there'd still be 9 games left in the regular season, and that's still a lot of football, still more than half of the season. But you can set a tone, you can set tempo, you can still tell the rest of the AFC East that we're still the Patriots. And you still got to go through Foxborough to win. And you still got to go through Foxborough to claim the division. And you can still send that message if you win this game on Sunday. And then you can work on some of the other things. Stripper sends a note. He says, Manningham is on the Niners now. Caller bragged about the Giants' wide receiver speed and cited Cruz and Manningham. Fail. Well, I think that's, yes, I think he probably even knew that too, Strippers, but thank you for pointing out the nitpickiness. That's just Strippers being nitpicky, that's all. Josh from Charlottesville, Virginia. As usual, I'm loving the show. Here's my nitpick. Is it just me, or do they always seem to kill themselves while killing the clock? Good point. It's a weird question, but that famous Patriots stranglehold is starting to work more against us than for us. The clock management sucked, sure enough, but they've been shooting themselves in the foot like this even before the last Super Bowl that we all hate to talk about. When they dial the clock down now, it seems like the other teams attack with the deep pass and succeed, and the pass just don't have an answer for whoever it may be across the field. I hate to even ask this question, but is Tom losing his clutch magic? I remember when 1:16 left on the clock was enough for Tom and the Brady Bunch to take care of business. We're all starting to get very nervous here down south. Well, guess what, Josh? We're all getting nervous up here in the north, too. Is he losing the clutch magic? Maybe. Maybe. I'm a little less sure now that, you know, Brady's going to be able to deliver in the clutch until he can show us that he can do it again. You have every reason to doubt it. I still think the ability is there, but it's sort of a confluence of several factors, not the least of which is he's got some different receivers. He's got some inexperience. He's got still a makeshift offensive line that's still working out some kinks. And, yeah, I still think there's something to working out the kinks between him and Josh McDaniels, too. I think there's something to that. I'm not sure exactly what, but I think there's still an adjustment period that the Patriots are having to readjust to, having different play callers call the plays. It's not the same as it was in 07 when he left. It's not the same playbook. The playbook has evolved. And I think that's part of the problem. All right, let's get another quick timeout in here, and then we'll continue with Facebook posts, tweets, emails, web radio, at patriots.com. What are your nitpicks? And then we put Seattle to bed here, all right? And then we start looking at the Jets, because it's time to start looking at the Jets. And we would ask this of the guys down the hallway to turn the page on the Seattle game, because there's really not much else you can do about it now. It was a classic fail. It was a big-time fail. So how do you pick up the pieces from here? We're going to start picking up the pieces coming up in the playbook.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 800-MY-SEATS.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Sullivan Tire and Auto Repair is teaming up with Bridgestone Tires for an offer that's going to make you and your family very excited. Now through September 30th, when you buy four select Bridgestone Tires at Sullivan Tire, you could receive a $70 American Express gift card or your very own Wii gaming system the whole family will love. See SullivanTire.com. Offer valid August 27th through September 30th, 2012. Mail-in claim form required. Cards issued by American Express Prepaid Card Management Corporation. Wii systems given away on behalf of Bridgestone America. Nintendo is not affiliated with this promotion. Certain limitations apply.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
What would make your life better? Start with better banking from Sovereign Bank. More than a checking account, better banking is a package of financial solutions with preferred rates, debit card cash rewards, and online banking with bill pay, along with the flexible options you need to help make your everyday a little easier to manage. And now Sovereign is part of Santander, one of the strongest, safest, and most successful banks in the world. That's what we call better banking. Sovereign Bank, member FDIC.
Want to be a Patriot season ticket holder? Join the Patriot season ticket holder wait list and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriot season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
I love,
love,
love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
This is Rob Gronkowski. I get lots of mail from fans asking me how they can be more like me, Gronk. It's easy. First, just head down to Dunkin' Donuts and pick up a freshly made bakery sandwich. Second, get a sweet nickname. Third, bench press 225 pounds 28 times. That's it. You're just like me, Gronk. Now hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab a bakery sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'.
Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
Now 6 seconds left in the half, and the Patriots are not sending the field goal unit up.
No, you got time for one more play.
Woodhead to the right of Brady. In motion, right to left comes Branch. Brady awaiting the shotgun snap. He's got it. Brady looks, fires to the end zone. It is incomplete, stopping the clock with 1 second remaining.
What?
Well, now they're going to say the Patriots don't have time. A goal. Intentional grounding?
Yep. Intentional grounding. Wow. Unbelievable. You know, if he had thrown the ball maybe 2 or 3 feet to the right or to the left toward one of the receivers, that would not have been the call. But it was just a brain cramp by Brady, just like he had the brain cramp that cost him the safety in the Super Bowl last February. And quite frankly, I don't know what to say. Very un-Brady-like. And, you know, that was, it was just a classic, utter failure. And there's really just no other way to look at it other than it was just a classic, utter failure. On Facebook, Jaime says, John, I'm still pretty PO'd about the game on Sunday. I threw a question to Mike Reese after the game, but I want to see is if there is any free agent secondary player out there right now in the market that we can pick up to help ours. No, not at this late stage. They're all what you call street free agents, and obviously if they were good enough, they would be on somebody's team. That doesn't mean that if somebody got hurt, they wouldn't try to maybe pick somebody up. But the fact of the matter is that really, and plus NFL, there's, you know, when you pick up guys like this late in the season, it's crapshoot. It's like trying to roll dice, you know, and even it's, you know, trying to get a 7 when you've only got one die. You know, it's going to be very, very difficult to do. So, I mean, you can always sign somebody to fill a position because you need the body, but to improve the situation that you have, well, you'd have made that call before now. Axel says, John and Kevin in the booth. First, it's really clever that the first show is on Tuesday so that we fans can calm down a little bit. Yes, very true. That's part of it. Found myself laughing after the game this Sunday because it was so embarrassing. I thought the Pats were supposed to be great, maybe even one of the powerhouses in the AFC, but instead they found themselves losing against another so-so team, Arizona being the first. I can't help myself asking if this is beginning the end of the greatest dynasty in football. Now, before you say I'm overreacting and we only lost one game, remember, if you add it up with the rest of the games they lost, it's 3 games. I don't think the Pats will end this season 8-8, but the years of going 14-2 might be over. It might look like I think the season is over and that the Pats will move out of Boston, but that's not the case. Personally, I think the Pats will end up about 10-6, but remember what team ended up being 9-7 last year. That's right, the New York freaking Giants, and they won it all. All right, so Axel's trying to spin his positive outlook.
They might win it all again the way they're playing.
They were really impressive against San Francisco, weren't they? Real good.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Did you see me, as you were pounding away at these emails, I was chatting with Mike Reese over here for a minute as he was doing a podcast.
Yeah.
I said, Mike, everyone's panicking. Everyone's bailing on this ship. But I just feel like with what I've seen, Baltimore, all the injuries this week, Houston getting blown out. Look at the game we watched last night. San Diego dominates for a half. Denver. There's just so much parity. I think that the Patriots can play with anybody in the NFL.
Oh, there's no doubt, Kev.
And as long as that's the case, I don't care what their record is.
Then you take your shot.
You can't count them. Just make the tournament.
And we're frustrated because we expect more out of this team based on past history. Because this team has produced more. Arguably, against a league that hasn't been quite as even as this one may be. But those are good points. Let's just get in the tournament. Let's just get in the tournament. Hopefully by December, this immature team, as I call it, has some maturation about it and can go and knock off the likes of, in December, they're going to have to knock off the likes of the Niners and the Texans, aren't they? Because they're going to have to face them. And if you can knock those teams off in December, well, then you can knock them off again in January, or in San Francisco's case, February, can't you? So, you're right. You're absolutely right. There's two ways to spin this. Axel says the nitpicks. Russell Wilson, an average of 18.3 yards per completion. Brady had some bad passes, but that comes with passing it 58 times. Yeah, I agree with that. 58 was a career high for Brady, and no way he should throw the ball 58 times. He says, and I don't want to nitpick on the last play of the first half, but it might have cost you the game. On a better note, it did cost him the game. Everything else being equal, that cost him the game. You get three out of that, you don't lose this game. On a better note, I think that Dennard has looked pretty good in the two games he's played in. Chandler Jones and Ninko got some pressure. Hernandez was back. Sorry for the long rant, but I had to say it. Great show as always. Looking forward to the game in London. Thank you, Axel. Mary Beth just sends me a two-word message. It stings. Put some bacitracin on it there, Mary Beth, and it'll go away. We're trying to do that for you today. This is a two-hour dose of Bactine. Remember that when you were a kid? You spray Bactine on your boo-boo, when you were a kid? Come on, Kevin, you're young enough to remember that, right? Shaking his head.
I don't remember. I mean, Neosporin.
Neosporin. That's true. You're too young to remember Bactine spray. Hell, I'm old enough to remember putting actual, Mercurochrome on it. The red stuff that probably gives you cancer.
Yeah, it was. It's actually probably the. It's the stuff that really burns. The. What is it?
Rubbing alcohol?
Peroxide. Peroxide.
Hydrogen peroxide.
It would be that first, then you dress it with the sporin, and then put a Band-Aid on it.
Right.
That's how Grandma would bundle
it. Grandma would do it, yes. That's very true. Keith says on Facebook, my concern is about the pregame coaching and in-game management. John, we have appeared to find it difficult to adapt to anything unexpected for several seasons. But if we're now going to compound that with crazy play calls, such as the fiasco at the end of the first half, then this team is only going to go one direction, downhill. Well, Keith, I would tell you that they clearly have to figure out a way to become more organized when it comes to late game management. And I'm sure that's an issue that we worked on in practice. There's no question about that. It has to be worked on. And so I'm sure that they will drill over that several times throughout the course of the week this week, knowing that it's going to have to come into play again. Whether it's this week or any subsequent week, they're going to have to work on 2-minute drill or, minute and six drill in this case, and figure out a way to get in position to at least get some points out of the thing. You can't keep coming up empty when you have opportunities present themselves, or when the defense, in this particular instance, hands you a gift on a silver platter. The maligned defense makes a stop. They make a huge gaffe and mishandle a punt. sack the guy for a huge loss, you get the ball in short field, plus territory, and you get zilch. That can't ever happen again. Rest assured, that will work. That will be worked on. It has to be. Cav says, John, I didn't get to write in, but my nitpick is with Josh Boyer. I can't for the life of me figure out how we continue to be so bad in the secondary. I honestly think it's time to overhaul the entire group and the coach. My only concern with that is Boyer's direction and coaching methods are coming from Bill Belichick. We've made improvements in the front seven. The only complaint is applying pressure late in games. But until the secondary can improve, we might be doomed long term. Well, Boyer's been mentioned. Matt Patricia's been mentioned. We've had Flores mentioned, who is also secondary coach, a defensive assistant, if you will. You know, all of those guys have input. But they are coaching the way that they're being taught to coach, because that has been the technique for this team to direct its defensive backs now, I believe, for the last several years. And it may just very well be that these guys aren't picking it up, may not even be able to pick it up. What's even more maddening to me is how Devin McCourty can learn these techniques and be the, you know, stick-to-it guy that we saw, and to regress like he has over the last 2 years, or now almost a year and a half, is just almost unthinkable. How does that happen, Devin? You know, and I realize he's playing the way that he's being asked to play. Maybe it's just been in the last couple of years, but frankly, it seems like it's been a little bit more than that. These guys are just still too soft. They're not turning. They're playing the hands. They're playing defensive back, where I would rather see them play more of an offensive defensive back, if that makes any sense at all. Now, you can't go and hammer somebody, but at the same time, right now, you got to change something, because it's chuck and duck for the opposing teams. They're just going to throw it up, and one or two things is going to happen. Somebody's going to catch it, or somebody's going to run over them. So you're going to get a 40-yard gain either way. It needs to change. It has to change. Cav says, I threw out the name on Twitter of Mike Jenkins from Dallas. The only fear is once we get a good defensive back, if our schemes would hurt the player's ability to play. I'm still in the small group who thought re-signing Samuel was a smart move. Yes, he's a jerk that dropped the pick in Super Bowl 42, but he was a hell of a corner. Well, yeah, Mike Jenkins from Dallas could possibly be one. You still have to have a willing partner. Is Dallas really willing to play with you on this? Number one. Number two, and I remember Mike Jenkins from his time in South Florida, good athlete. Is he better than what you have? And the fear is, again, and you bring up a good point, Cav, the fear is that you get a good defensive back in there, but if he's being taught a different scheme, that certainly could affect his ability to play, just like I think it's affecting the current defensive back's ability to play. The scheme is got to change. The philosophy, the thought process, got to change, because it isn't working. I'm calling for that now. I think we're all calling for that now. It must change. Can it change this week? I don't know. Can it change next week? I don't know that either. But at some point in time, it has to change. Or younger guys have to play, and you go with guys that can, you know, be a little bit more athletic, be a little bit more aggressive, what have you. See if you've got some players that can end up being on this team for the long haul, as opposed to, you know, short-term answers. That, I think, is crucial. All right. As we begin to wrap up the program, just a program reminder for you that tomorrow, because I will be in transit covering a Big East Media Day. And by the way, if you're into college hoops at all, it's an unbelievable day. We'll be doing it from the New York Athletic Club in Manhattan, Midtown Manhattan tomorrow for the Big East Media Day. You can follow it, hashtag BE Media Day on Twitter. BE Media Day is the hashtag to follow, and I'll be live on BigEast.org is the website tomorrow from about 10 a.m. until probably 12:30 or 1 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, doing college basketball with the premier conference in the country. And after that, then be on the train ride back, and then we'll be back here in the studio on Thursday for all things JETS. And the full attention will be given to the Jets, and it has to be. And you know the guys down the hallway, there's no question in my mind, it's got to be that way. And it will be that way for them. Coming up next, of course, it's fantasy football. Bill and Todd will take you through, so hang on to that. In the meantime, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.